Speech War Document 47. Rights of Property and Abuses of Wealth. From an address delivered in Vicksburg, Mississippi, October 21, 1907. Now, my friends, I have spoken to you so far only of things affecting our material well-being. They are of prime importance. It is as important for a nation that there shall be a foundation of material prosperity, as it is important for an individual that there shall be such a foundation. I distrust the man in private life who is filled with enthusiasm to reform mankind, but who can support his own life and family. Let the man first pull his own weight, let him support himself and those dependent upon him, he will find it at times a good deal of a job. When he has done this, he has laid the foundation for making himself a useful citizen in broader aspects. Now with the nation it is the same thing. We must have a basis of material prosperity in which to build, but woe to the nation which never rears in that foundation the superstructure of a higher life. General Lee, you, and those who thought beside you and those who thought against you are enshrined imperishably in the hearts of the people of the entire Union, because, when the time came which called for you to risk all that you had, property, life, and all, for fealty to your ideals, you gladly spurned every other consideration, treated all else as naught in the balance compared to the chance to show your manhood in the field of battle. We honor you, we honor those who fought under you and those who fought against you, because they had that fine capacity to ignore everything else, life included, when honor called. But we need to have that spirit shown in civic life, just as much as in military life. If ever our people become so sordid as to feel that all that counts is moneyed prosperity, ignoble well-being, effortless ease and comfort, then this nation shall perish, as it will deserve to perish, from the earth. In time of war we need the courage and disinterestedness of the highest type of soldier. In the ordinary times there is need that there shall be displayed a courage almost as high and even more steadfast. I say even more steadfast, because, after all, a man can often pull himself up to meet a single crisis, when he would find it mighty hard to live right along, day after day, year after year, doing well the plain, common everyday work of his life. But exactly, as we need the courage of the soldier and the patriotism of the soldier, so we need a genuine, steadfast devotion to right in every man, not only in our public servants. As Mr. Williams said, the public servant is in the long run only what the war with behind him, the people, makes him, not only in our public servants, but in all of us, individually. We need to show the spirit which will neither tolerate nor yet inflict injustice, and, gentlemen, we need that spirit to manifest itself not merely in applauding noble sentiments uttered in the platform, but in living up to those sentiments when we get home. It does no good whatever to go to a public meeting and applaud utterances about civic righteousness and the high ideal, if the man applauding does not try measurably to realize them by his own efforts in his own life. Mr. Williams has said that for a day we can sink all merely party differences. Since I have been president I have found that not merely for a day but for most of the time I needed to sink them. Because the differences of party are of infinitesimal importance compared to the great fundamentals of good citizenship upon which all American citizens should be united. We can afford to differ on the first questions only so long as we remember that difference in those questions must never be allowed to obscure our identity of feeling on the other and infinitely greater questions. We, as a nation, have great and terrible problems to confront us in the century that is now opening. I do not believe that there is any other nation with a future as great as ours, but I believe in that future primarily, because I believe that the average American citizen will bring to the solution of the political problems which confront us, the three cardinal virtues of honesty, courage and common sense, and we shall need all three. In our highly complex industrial civilization of today we are confronted by certain ominous tendencies which must be met and overcome, not by indifference, not by a foolish optimism, which is but one degree less foolish than a foolish pessimism, but by a resolute purpose to face the evil, to recognize it, and then to overcome it. It has been well said that in the long run the most uncomfortable truth is a safer companion than the most pleasant falsehood. We must not bind ourselves to those tendencies which tell for evil in our modern life. There are plenty of them. Recognize them, and overcome them by the banded effort of the men who believe in public and private decency. First and foremost, in our internal affairs let us strive steadily to secure absolute justice, as between man and man without regard to the man's position, social or otherwise. Let us remember that justice can never be justice, unless it is equal. Do justice to the rich man and exact justice from him. Do justice to the poor man and exact justice from him. Justice to the capitalist and justice to the wage worker. Give each man every chance you can as long as he acts honestly, and if he acts dishonestly, hold him to the sharpest account, before the courts, if it is possible, at the bar of public opinion, when the case is one which the courts cannot reach. It is not an easy matter to do such justice. All the republics of antiquity failed in the end, as the Italian republics of the Middle Ages failed, because sooner or later they divided into two camps, one camp containing the poor who wished to plunder the rich, and the other the rich who wished to exploit the poor. When that division had once been accomplished, the downfall of the republic was at hand. It made no difference whether it was the rich that triumphed, or the mob that triumphed, the end had come in either case. This republic of ours will survive, because our people will not tolerate its being turned into either a government of a plutocracy, or the government of a mob, because by law and by the administration of the law we will punish the man of vast wealth who uses his wealth or acquires it in a way hostile to the interests of the people as a whole, and because under and through the law we will permit no mob rule in this land. Not only must we do justice to each man, but we must not be frightened out of doing justice merely because it happens to be advocated by somebody whom we do not like. I have an equally hearty aversion for the reactionary and the demagogue, but I am not going to be driven out of fealty to my principles, because certain of them are championed by the reactionary and certain others by the demagogue. The reactionary is always strongly for the rights of property, so am I, and even if I do not like him I will protect him to the extent of my power, if any man tries to wrong him. And I will not be driven away from championship of the rights of property upon which all our civilization rests, because they happen also to be championed by people who champion furthermore the abuses of wealth. And incidentally, I will try to help that reactionary in spite of himself, by correcting the abuses of which he is guilty and punishing him, when he commits them, thereby doing more to safeguard the real rights of property than can be done in any other way. So with the demagogues. Most demagogues advocate some excellent popular principles, and nothing can be more foolish than for decent men to permit themselves to be put into an attitude of ignorant and perverse opposition to all reforms demanded in the name of the people, because it happens that some of them are demanded by demagogues. No one man, no hundred or thousand men, can accomplish the kind of reform that I wish to see accomplished in our public life. It has got to come through the action of many executive, legislative, and judicial officers, each working in his own sphere, and while I agree heartily that the Constitution of the United States represents a fixed series of principles, yet I hold that in the name, in the interest, of the people it must be interpreted not as a straitjacket, not as laying the hand of death upon our development, but as an instrument designed for the life and healthy growth of the nation. I want to see executive, legislator, judge, not only desire to do right, but able to do right. Sometimes executive and legislative officers are under temptation to yield too much to an improper public clamor. The temptation to the judge, the long-term appointive or elective judge, is often just the reverse. The judge naturally, after he is on the bench, sees only people representing one small section of society. I want to see on the bench judges who will know and feel for all of our people. If it is in New York, I want to see the judge who knows and feels for the East Side as much as for Fifth Avenue. I take that instance merely because it is what I am acquainted with in my own home. It applies, with a change of name, everywhere through the country. Now I trust I need not say, but I will say, that I do not mean for one moment that the judge shall yield to the strongest kind of popular clamor, if it conflicts with his own sense of right. If all the people demand that the judge do one thing and his conscience tells him that it is wrong, he is disloyal to the real interests of the people that demand that thing, if he does it, and the same holds true of executive and legislator. I will uphold the judge's hands in every way, in dealing with mob violence, in conserving the rights of property, in disregarding popular clamor, if popular clamor is wrong, but I want to see the judge a man knowing the needs of the people as a whole, sympathizing with the wage worker, because he knows what he needs, just as he sympathizes with the capitalist, because he knows what he needs. I hope to see that standard obtained in the federal and state courts alike. We can exist, as a nation only, if we do justice in that way between ourselves.